Good evening, good evening. Happy Monday night. You made it. Welcome. You are listening to Neurodiversity Radio, and my name is Heather McRae. I am the world's first and only standalone neurodiversity coach. Neurodiversity, if you break it down, neuro of the brain, diversity, difference, brain difference. I coach different thinkers. I coach people who are those who think outside of the box, people who are labeled at times as having quote-unquote learning disabilities, ADD, ADHD, autism, Asperger's. If you are a different thinker, gay, straight, bisexual, anybody who is an outside-the-box person, I work with you. And what I do is I use the 8 principles of neurodiversity that were created by Dr. Thomas Armstrong, and it's about creating your positive niche, your positive place in the world. So welcome. We made it. It's Monday night. I don't know about you, but I had kind of a funky day. I think I do my best not to make Mondays that kind of a day just because I really actually look forward to the week. So I'm very happy to let it go. Very, very excited about my guest tonight on Neurodiversity Radio. Catherine Hogan is somebody that I actually met, like many amazing people, actually on Facebook. And Catherine is the direct founder and director of Inclusion Teaming, which is a nonprofit corporation. And the mission of Inclusion Teaming is to reduce bullying and facilitate talent through communication, diversity training, where challenge communications and traditional communicators learn from each other. She is someone who works in the trenches with at-risk folks. And when I was teaching preschool and middle school, I worked with at-risk children. So Catherine and I have an awful lot in common, and she does a lot of good for a lot of people. So I'm going to bring her on right now so we can get talking. Catherine, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
Oh, you're welcome. It's my pleasure. Quite an honor.
I'm really, I know I told you I felt like, you know, I'd met my big sister because you and I are so cut, it feels like you and I are cut from the same cloth, and we have an awful lot in common in terms of background. What can you tell folks about inclusion teaming? What is inclusion teaming?
Well, inclusion teaming is essentially a way to provide opportunities for youth with social communication challenges to actually practice in real-world settings. And as a byproduct of that practice, which they do with, and I word as the only word that's pretty common for most folks, with traditional or typical communicators,
yeah,
who also gain great benefit through the.
Catherine, we're having trouble hearing you. Are you there?
Oh yeah. Did you hear that?
Yeah. Can you? What's going on?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know why you can't hear me. I can hear you very well.
There you go. There you are.
Okay.
But so you were talking about how there are traditional communicators.
Yes. And I use that word because it's been very difficult to find another word that doesn't create an imbalance. So for the time, they would use the word traditional, non-traditional. And then non-traditional could be broken down into several categories. But we bring them together as equal partners to learn from each other, number one, about the difference of that particular group and how they can bridge strategies for more effective communications with each other.
That's fantastic. It must, you guys must be doing bonus work when it comes to issues like bullying. Is bullying one of the issues you think that inclusion teaming is so necessary?
Oh, yes. In fact, the way inclusion team, I have done a great deal of work in the area of bullying. I was on the Connecticut Governor's Task Force on bullying, done speaking nationally. I've been associated with the moms who were very active in getting bullying laws together. And what I realized is when it was time for me to be independent in my work, I could teach social skills for sure, but I became somewhat saddened by that thought, and I realized finally one morning it's really the result of the fact that I could teach these youth for many months or years, but that they never had the opportunity to actually practice. And that's what I wanted to create. Once I had it, I ran with it.
That's fantastic. So in other words, you could take a group of street kids who could be some of the most talented and interesting kids in the world, but because they may have communication styles that don't lend themselves to anything but trouble, I'll bet you have a lot of success in helping these kids get further in their life.
Yes, but that's interesting that you raise that question, because when we use the word street kid,
yeah,
many of these youth have actually traditional communications. Some of them, of course, also have perhaps communication styles that are still ADHD or an autism spectrum disorder. But many also have traditional communications, and we can actually come together by making that distinction between where we would put them around the table. But we can about empower both.
So you can empower both the traditional communicators and the non-traditional communicators and help them find middle ground. Is that kind of...
Oh, absolutely, yes.
Okay. So why do you say... I'm sorry, go ahead.
They both experience being in leadership positions, or, you know, they feel equals and that they're of value to each other.
Well, yeah, that's essential because, I mean, it takes out the victim dynamic from any conversation if you know, nobody's sitting in a chair of power, for sure.
Absolutely.
Why do you say that youth with traditional communications are willing to learn alongside youth with social communication challenges?
Oh, for two reasons. Number one, the first time we presented the opportunity for traditional communicators to share in this experience, we had 47 volunteers, high school volunteers from schools in the community, wanted to, and we had five students with syndrome. We didn't have enough non-traditional communicators at the time.
Sure.
I'm
sorry, one more time. What was the last thing you said?
The response was there are many, many in our high school today that are more than happy.
Catherine, we're having technical issues in terms of your voice coming and going, like your mouth is coming and going away from the microphone, so I'm having a hard time hearing the second half of your sentences.
Yeah, I'm going to move to a window and see if we can get better reception.
Okay.
Because yeah. I'm not moving away from the phone in any way.
Okay,
see if this is...
Oh, infinitely better, yeah.
Yes, good, wonderful.
Sorry about that. That's the beauty of technology. Now, okay, so you were saying that when you set up a roundtable with traditional communicators from a high school setting and non-traditional kids, there were 40 children who were willing to volunteer, but there were only five who were from the autism spectrum. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, because the word hadn't really gotten out there yet. But the response was quite meaningful. And I knew that. I knew it would be, actually.
Right. You knew you were onto something. It was just an issue of getting started, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So what did the youth learn?
Well, the youth learned several things. They learned to navigate the feelings that each of them has when they experience the difficulty in the communication. And they learned to navigate that by building strategies between themselves. We provide certain strategies, but then we write ideas of the youth to further enhance or to further develop their ability to communicate with one another.
And what do the challenge communicators learn?
The same thing, exactly the same thing. But probably the most important thing is they begin to integrate their challenge, difference, and feel very confident, and to experience for the, I think, often for the first time feeling like they're equal partners in ideas in the world and how they express those ideas.
So, Catherine, when you put together these situations, are the kids like doing volunteer projects together, or are they sitting around talking, or what is the...
Okay, so imagine that sense of empowerment that you talked about before, where there isn't one chair that's up and one chair that's down. We do it in local communities at conference tables, and the chairs are, we often look for...
I'm losing you again.
Okay, I'm still in the same spot. Let me try. I don't know what to do.
All right.
We do the work conference table in nice chairs where all the students feel as equals. Is that what you asked me?
Yep.
Okay.
So the kids sit around together, and are there specific issues that you, like you said that you do this at different conferences.
I'm sorry, sir. No, that was the beginning. We do it at conference tables.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah, it was a sound issue, yeah.
Yeah, so, at a level-shaped table wherever.
In other words, it's a level playing field so that nobody feels like they have the upper hand on anybody else. Have you, Catherine, have you gone into schools with this and been able to kind of redirect behaviors using this?
Well, often as much as redirecting behaviors, but in facilitating communications.
Yeah.
But actually, we prefer to do it in the community, in local communities. We are looking to make it available fee-wise to that is that we want the children to be in another environment in which they absolutely know that it's safe, because particularly the non-traditional communicators are anxious because their experiences with bullying may not have been good. And also they get to meet a community, not just their own school.
Yeah, I see your point. And if you had to bring them to school, it would be more of a formal thing and people would be on their guard and have their hackles up. So I can see how that would probably not be as successful because the kids need to be able to feel relaxed and safe. I get it.
Yeah, that's part of it. And the other part is pulling the children and actually placing them in the course for their specific need may be difficult in a school setting.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Now, how are you going to get out there to all the families who have a child who can benefit? What are your strategies for getting the word out?
Well, right now we have a website on transition and the Facebook for inclusion teaming. We're using social media. We have some printed materials for locally, but that's essentially our right at the moment.
So, Catherine, if people wanted to volunteer to help you, how would they go about doing that? I know that you guys are fundraising, correct?
Yes, we have a grant and we have a donation. So, yes, donation for the local community. So it's just beginning to happen.
And I remember I had a delay. Oh, no, that's okay. I remember when you and I were talking the Sunday after, you and I met on Facebook, you were telling me that you're hoping to expand. You guys are in Connecticut right now, correct? In New Haven?
Yes, correct.
Okay, and you told me that you're hoping that your hope is to put inclusion teaming in every major city, correct?
Oh, absolutely. There's higher need for this type of practice opportunity. The resources are among the youth themselves.
Well, yeah, because I would think that if you can get, I think you told me that you were able to get involved with some of the churches too, right, where it's a really safe setting for the kids and they can, really sit in a supportive setting and talk to each other, correct?
Yes, that would be, I might do it in the local community. We also have a collaboration going on with the Boys and Girls Club, so that would be another means with which we may be able to bring it to families all families.
That's phenomenal. Have you thought about, have you had any success or thought about doing this with grown-ups too, with the parents of the children?
We think down the road that this could be very helpful to adults in the world, but right now we need to focus. We'd like them to have these opportunities before they get into those situations or even before they get into college where they begin to feel lost.
Yeah, it's funny because, Catherine, one of the things I've talked about actually with several people is that time when with kids either that have IEPs or, you know, are in special, for anybody who doesn't know what an IEP is, it's an individual education plan. And if you're in special education, that is like the template by which you go forward in your education and helps you focus on certain skills, social and mathematics and language and all that stuff.
Yes.
But you get to reach all of the kids that don't necessarily fit into or don't qualify for special education, which is so important.
Well, Heather, actually, many, well, again, we're small, so I can't tell you that we've served hundreds of children. But one of the nice things about our program is you don't have to have a diagnosis, but if you do, all the better. In other words, again, our primary goal is if you have your child's social communication challenge, happy to help evaluate that and serve your child.
That's phenomenal. I mean, that's been my experience with both teaching and coaching is with us neurodiverse folks, it's all about the social skills. You know, it's the discomfort, it's not knowing what to say at the right time or, you know, putting your foot in a lot, either out of habit or not, you know, not understanding people's facial expressions and all that other kind of stuff. So it's amazing that you're able to do this work.
Did you say putting your foot in your mouth?
Yeah.
Okay, and one of my favorite terms is there's some folks that every time they open their mouth, they change feet. And that needs to be appreciated and deeply understood.
Yep. I mean, that could be a cornerstone for understanding, if nothing else. Because, I mean, I've been one of those people and can be on and off. So I certainly empathize. So what is the age range of the kids you work with, Catherine?
Well, we're right now on school. But if we had our journey, the organization was completely solidified at this point, we would try to have youth age 10 because it's at that age where they've probably had a great deal of preliminary social training, and that's when it would be really good psychologically for them to have an experience with traditional / typical peers that validates them for who they are.
So kids that are towards the end of elementary school but not quite in middle school yet.
That's what we would like to do, yes. Right now we're just doing high school, only because of structure, funding, that type of thing.
Sure. But, I mean, God knows the high school kids need it too. It's almost harder when you're at that point because there's so much pressure on you. Excuse me. There's so much pressure on you, whether you are a special education student or not, to figure out what the next thing is. And if you have... you know, the 2 feet in your mouth at all times, it's pretty hard to go to job interviews and stuff if your foot is what people see before they see anything else.
Right. And I think schools do a good job with trying to focus on social skills training and, you know, break it out into the different groups. But unfortunately, many of them are with mixed.
I'm sorry, one more time. With
they
many
have
of them?
In a group
training
experience right now where we're teaching social skills, many students are mixed together and their social communication challenges may not be the same. But more importantly, schools don't create the opportunities we are trying to create. We're trying to support the individuals for students with social communication challenges.
Yeah, that's true because you know, even if you're looking at, you know, school clubs and stuff like that, most of that is after school hours. And
well, it's an activity based, Heather. It's based where we are communication and instructional based.
Right, that's right. That's right. I mean, you have a specific reason for what you're doing as opposed to just bringing kids together to, I mean, throwing a yearbook together isn't the same thing as talking about the words you're using while you're doing it, or, you know.
Absolutely, and it's not the same skill you would need for the workplace. You really need to know how to, you know, communicate more effectively or at least identify your difficulties so that others, you know, can accommodate you.
That's true, or that you can learn how to accommodate other people. I mean, that's the other side of the coin, too, isn't it?
Absolutely. The traditional communicator will be, you know, top-notch facilitator on a team if he understands the differences better.
Well, that's right, and that's a great skill for anybody, least of all somebody who's a young adult who is, you know, struggling with their social skills, for sure. Can you give everybody your contact information one more time?
Sure. The name of the company is Inclusion Teaming Corp. And our email, I can give you my email as the director, Catherine with a C, Catherine, .Hogan, H-O-G-A, at inclusionteaming.org.
Okay, so Catherine with a C, dot Hogan, H-O-G-A-N, at inclusionteaming.org. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Catherine, do you want to give out a phone number or no?
Sure. Fine. And you should know that volunteers as far as California. So that's
so
wonderful.
You're saying you have volunteers as far away as California?
Yes.
That's
yes.
Phenomenal.
So let me give you my phone number.
Yep.
It's 03-203-605-7-8727.
So 203-605-8727. And your website address is inclusionteaming.org.
Correct.
I'm so glad you could be with us tonight, Catherine. What I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you to come back. And we'll see if we can work on our sound issues a little bit, because it has been hard to hear. And, you know, what you do is so, so important. And I really want people to get, you know, get the nuts and bolts of what you do. So I hope that you will forgive us for the sound quality tonight. And we will have you back on soon and we'll do this again, okay?
Sure. And I'll make sure I get to a landline for you. That would be helpful.
Okay.
Okay.
I appreciate it. So much, Catherine. Have a great night.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
That was Catherine Hogan, and she is the director and founder of Inclusion Teaming, which is a nonprofit corporation. I apologize that the sound was so bad. What they do is they work in the community, bringing together kids from different types of communication skills, so that they can learn to understand each other better. Catherine has worked as a psychotherapist and has done a tremendous amount of work for years working with inner city kids, and I'm so glad that she could be on the show tonight. If you ever have any questions for me about neurodiversity, I actually have a really neat questionnaire that I created that's on my website at processdifferently.com, which will give you an idea of what neurodiversity is in terms of different thinking, because the term neurodiversity was first coined by Dr. Judy Singer in the early to mid-90s, and it was initially intended as a rethinking of the autism spectrum, because people with autism and you know, I have ADHD also, people with autism, ADD, ADHD are so misunderstood at times, and at times, you know, as Catherine was saying, our communication styles can be very different from other people's, and it can end up causing problems. And when Dr. Thomas Armstrong took neurodiversity one step further, he created 8 principles of neurodiversity in an attempt to not just talk about, which is kind of what I do, which is not just talk about autism, but talk about any brain difference, anybody with a brain difference. And I'm just going to read these to you real quick because they're actually very interesting. The first principle is the human brain works more like an ecosystem than a machine. The second one is the human brain exists along continuums of competence. The third one is human competence is defined by the values of the culture to which you belong. The next one is whether you are regarded as disabled or gifted, it depends largely on when and where you were born. The next principle, success in life is based on adapting one's brain to the needs of the surrounding environment. The next one, success in life also depends on modifying your surrounding environment to fit the needs of your unique brain, which is niche construction. Niche construction includes career and lifestyle choices, assistive technology, human resources, and other life-enhancing strategies tailored to the specific needs of a neurodiverse individual. Positive niche construction directly modifies the brain, which in turn enhances its ability to adapt to the environment. I have these listed on my website. If you want to take another look, I also have some commentary on each one and how I work with my clients to step out of struggling. That's one of the big things that I really work with others because it's something I've had to do with myself. I was only diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 40, so I lived most of my life in total chaos. And it takes a lot of changed habits to move away from struggling thinking to being more open and more fluid and more dynamic and more self-assured. But it takes practice, and sometimes it takes coaching. It takes somebody to point out what your gifts really are, because sometimes you can be just absolutely drowning in something that you think you want, when it's really not something that you're good at because you didn't know that you're actually good at this one other thing. So whenever you get a chance, check out my website. It is processdifferently.com. I thank you so much for listening tonight. I apologize for the technical issues, and I look forward to speaking with you next week. Have a wonderful week, everybody, and take good care. Love and light to you.